Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Where to now as talks continue between the EU and US to avert 30% tariffs? It comes as the tarnished Simon Harris is set to tell Cabinet this morning that there is a considerable amount of uncertainty around tariffs with just 10 days to go. Will Trump chicken out? Do the markets think the US president will carry through with his threats? For more on this, we're joined by Noel O'Connell, CEO of the European Movement Ireland, and Russ Mould, Investment Director at AJ Bell. Good morning to both of you. Russ, can I start with you?
Morning, Philip. Yes, of course.
$64,000 question. Will they happen? Will these tariffs come into effect from the morning of August the 2nd?
I think the financial markets are still taking the view that there will be possibly further delays and a compromise reached at some stage, and that 30% on the EU may not come in. But where that then leaves, say, the 10% base load tariffs that the president keeps talking about, or those already imposed upon steel, aluminium and autos, they may well stay. But I think given the panic that was caused back in April, I think a lot of people may well be slightly of the view that even that 10% figure would be a bit of a win for both sides.
Because looked at from the American perspective, inflation has started to rise over there. Trump is coming under domestic pressure over the tariffs. It's at the root of that powwow between himself and the chair of the Fed, Jerome Powell, for not cutting interest rates. Is this, do you think, perhaps changing the calculations around tariffs for Trump?
If you think there's a coherent plan here, and it is tempting to think that there isn't, because he does tend to shoot from the hip. But if you think there is a coherent plan, he's constantly calling for a lower dollar, lower energy prices, lower interest rates, lower taxes. So in that respect, he's trying to boost economic growth and get the American economy to run hot. If you then add to that onshoring production and trying to emphasize domestic production rather than imports, which he's trying to choke off through tariffs, you could argue there is a plan. Equally, there's lots of pushback on that. Economists don't agree on much, but they will generally agree that in the 1930s, worldwide tariffs made a bad situation worse. You have seen a slowdown in the US economy already, and there is a danger of some inflation going up. And also, you can't necessarily have your tariff income and your local jobs at the same time, because if you get the local job, local production, then you don't get the imports, you don't get the tariffs. So it might not be quite as straightforward as the president would like us to think. And it's interesting just listening to what Michael O'Leary of Ryanair was saying yesterday. He thinks that the 1st of August deadline will become a 1st of September deadline and a 1st of October deadline until there is a deal done of some kind with the EU. So markets still think that, yeah, Trump probably will back off, but we may end up again with some degree of base load tariffs at some stage.
Okay, I got the same question for both of you, but let me put it to you, Noel O'Connell, CEO of the European Movement Ireland, first. Is it right to take him at his word that he is sincere about the imposition of these tariffs on August the 1st, or is it the wrong thing to do and should we just sit back and wait for him to make his next move?
Well, Philip, I don't think we can afford to sit back and wait for him to take his next move. As we have seen, I think the EU has a huge amount of leverage in this negotiation, and we have seen consistent, unified approach aiming for a reasoned, robust, negotiated settlement that protects the interests of consumers on both sides of the Atlantic, obviously, at an EU level. And I don't know if it's helpful if we continually go with the TACO moniker, because I think there's an inherent risk in that of essentially the markets then not taking on board that he could seriously enact the tariffs. And what the EU has been crystal clear from day one on this, and, you know, as let's be clear on this ourselves, the EU never wanted this. Ireland didn't certainly want this. There's no winners in this tariff war, which really has all come into being. It's hard to believe. Okay. We're only 6 months since the Trump inauguration.
But when he kicked the can down the road on the reciprocal tariffs by 90 days, he said that he wanted to get 90 deals in those 90 days. Mm. He got two in that time. And that would appear to be what he wants. This transactional president wants something that he can wave in front of the crowds, the domestic audience, and say, look what rattling the tariff saber actually secured me. So for that reason alone, should we not say, OK, go ahead. impose your tariffs and we'll negotiate with you then.
Well, negotiations are ongoing, Philip, at the moment. Commissioner Shefcovic is over in Washington doing a huge range of negotiations with Lutnick, with Jameson Greer. So the negotiations have been going on and they are going on. But let's also flip it at an EU level. What President Trump has also actually managed to do is really expedite the EU's level of trade discussions and negotiations, because we are seeing the EU doubling down, deepening new markets and agreements with huge markets like India, Thailand, Philippines, Malaysia, Mercosur. So that ramping up of the EU, looking at alternative markets and trying to mitigate the worst effects of the tariffs. We have seen a really steely resolve at an EU level, which is not easy. To try to get 27 countries agreeing what the corrective course of action should be is not easy.
Okay, and that is a fascinating point. Let me come to it in a second, but I want to get your thoughts, Russ, on that idea that Europe is now pivoting away from the United States. Is there any evidence to support that, or is that aspiration, do you think, rather than actuality?
I think the trade talks we just heard about are definitely a good example of that. And although the UK is one of those two deals that has been done, the UK has been looking to, having struck out on its own path nearly nine years ago, it's also looking to strike deals with fresh partners, and I think it's working on those with India and Australia and all sorts of other markets. So I think the EU would understandably be looking to protect itself, because Trump does say that, if you'll pardon the language, that the EU was set up to screw the United States of America, and there's no doubt that the EU is a very, very powerful economic bloc when it works together.
So let's come back to that question about Europe speaking with one voice, Noel, because it's a pretty tough act to pull off at the best of times. And these tariffs are going to hit very, very unequally, aren't they?
Yeah, there's no two ways about it. The impact of the imposition of tariffs is not going to be equally spread right across the EU. But if we take the fact that the EU has the competency to act on trade on behalf of all the 27
the
member
commission
states,
does, yes.
The Commission, exactly, 450 million, that is a larger single market than the US population. So let's just kind of keep that in mind. But you're absolutely correct, Philip. Certain member states, certain countries' economies, and certain sectors will be more closely impacted and affected by the tariffs. So what am I talking about that?
Germany, Italy, Ireland.
Exactly. Also, you could look at the Netherlands as well, will be impacted. But then let's look at the second tier of European economies and European countries that will be directly impacted by their exposure to other markets within the EU. So take, for example, Spain, impacted by its exposure to the German economy. The same with Slovakia. Sectors such as automotive, aviation. Ireland is the leader in the aviation sector. How we've already heard Michael O'Leary talk about the impact on the aviation tariffs. So there's going to be a huge range of challenges, but I think the EU's approach is to remain consistent and unified and uphold the fundamental tenets of the international rule-based order based on democracy, based on multilateralism, and I think to be a trusted and trustworthy trading and negotiating partner, which is something that the EU is renowned for, and that mitigates the stability and the uncertainty and the volatility that has been created by this ongoing discussion and negotiation. And I think it would be somebody very, very brave to forecast and predict with any certainty whether the tariffs will be imposed on the 1st of August. And let's not forget as well, President Trump, I think, is going to Scotland, isn't he, for 5 days to visit his golf courses. The holiday season is coming for your listeners. Brussels really does shut down in August. So there's a huge impetus and a momentum to get a little bit more clarity and consistency. And what the EU are doing with their officials, with ministers right across the different member states, is fighting tooth and nail to get consensus, to get agreement, to get a framework set of rules that will bring some stability and cool down the uncertainty in this. But again, we have to, as we used to say, and my old boss used to always give the HR advice of you never react, you always respond. And we are living in, we are living in really, really challenging times, as you know, and it's something that the EU is going to have to continue continuing to work on.
Russ, if the European Commission didn't have to herd 27 cats in the same direction, would they be able to play a better game of hardball with the United States?
No, I think taking on, as Noel said, 450 million people is no mean feat. I think if you do that with a unified front, then you're carrying a stick that's every bit as big as the one that the president's carrying, if not bigger. So no, I think the unified approach would be is a much more preferable one from, you know, dealing with somebody who wrote a book called The Art of the Deal.
Yeah, it does always bring you back, doesn't it, to the idea that he is very transactional and you just have to hit on the right bauble or the right prize to secure that deal. Noel, let's just talk a little bit more detailed about Ireland and how out of line it is in terms of potential impacts with the rest of Europe. How isolated, how vulnerable are we?
Well, firstly, we're not really out of line and isolated in terms of the rest of the EU. Yes, we are one of the countries that are going to be most closely economically impacted. So that's clear, as Minister Pascal Donoghue has said, as a small open trading economy. And Ireland has been really successful in attracting FDI. But also, you know, other EU member states have their priorities as well. We can't afford to lose sight of that. As we mentioned already and Russ outlined, you know, Germany's automotive industry, the impact on services as well. And we shouldn't have, lose sight of the fact as well, Philip, that I think the EU does have a number of tools and arsenal in its back pocket that it can bring to bear in terms of the negotiations, such as what has been termed the anti-coercion instrument, the trade bazooka side of that, in terms of digital tax on digital services. These are all huge areas of potential that the EU can look at, but it's about trying to mitigate the worst aspects. We have seen it was over 90 billion in terms of tariffs, it's now down to over 70 billion. But that resilience and that determination is something that I think that the EU has to do. And from an Irish perspective, every year European Movement Ireland surveys what people think about Ireland's relationship with the EU. And this year in our findings, 61% of the people in Ireland say that the EU performs most efficiently and most effectively in the areas of trade and economy. So we can't lose sight of the fact, as Russ already alluded to, we have a single market of 450 million people. Ireland's population, same size as Barcelona. So imagine if we were out on our own on this. We're not. We are negotiating with our European partners, with our allies, to get a really good deal that mitigates the worst impacts of this. But there are no winners in this, Philip.
Given then that pivot away, for the need to pivot away from the United States, should the Irish government remove its remaining objections to the Mercosur deal and sign up to that wholeheartedly?
I don't think we should talk about pivoting away from the US. I mean, that transatlantic relationship, we only recently celebrated and marked 100 years of Irish-US diplomatic relations. But yeah, we have to look at new alternative trade deals, such as Mercosur, such as I've said, the EU's looking to have one done and completed with India before the
end
of this year.
Even if that is not in the interests of sectors like the beef industry in Ireland.
It's a massive challenge. I'm the daughter of a farmer. I know all too well the challenge of this and how it impacts. But we have to be open to looking at exploring opportunities. And also the government has to look at initiatives of how it protects and safeguards those really, really vulnerable sectors that are going to be worst affected by any potential tariffs that get imposed.
Okay. Noel O'Connell and Russ Mould, thank you both very much for that. 51551 on the text. Philip, I'm a teacher of 22 years. We have three teenage children and my husband is working. For the first time in my career, I'm planning on doing an after-school club to make extra money while my husband is looking for additional opportunities to make extra income in the evenings and weekends. The cost of living has meant significant drops in our standard of living and we are paycheck to paycheck. I never expected things to be this hard at this point in our lives, says Sarah. 51551, as I say, for the text. 0870 32 32 32 for the WhatsApps. We'll be looking at the European digital wallet after this.